For October the 27th, 2017, we talk about Superhot VR, the Switch adding GameCube controller functionality, and we ask you, what's holding back your favorite game? Welcome to Level 218. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. If I sound different, it's because A, my preamp is busted, so you're hearing me natural. And second, my voice is leaving me because of the weekend spent at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. Oh,
yeah, how was it?
Worth.
Dennis, you say worth it?
Yes.
Yes. It was worth it. It was a lot of fun. Got to meet a lot of very nice people. There was one particular gentleman. He goes by the name Zlok, the social justice barbarian on social media. He was real on point with like deep cut abject suffering references, and he was also a volunteer at the show. Yeah, it was a good time, and both in the show, doing our live panel was a lot of fun, and the extracurricular stuff. It was nice to see all those people. Yeah.
Did you do karaoke?
Yes. Yes, I did.
What songs can we attribute to you losing your voice?
Oh, man. I kind of forget. I need to pull up the list. I know I closed
on... Good night of karaoke right there.
Right. Well, that's also the heaviest drinking night of the affair. But I managed to not get hungover, which is good. And I think literally a first in the 10 or so live shows we've done. yeah, I sang September by Earth, Wind, and Fire. I'm completely blanking. Did a lot of REM, if I'm being honest with you, just to give that show a send off.
Gotta give the crowd what they want.
Yeah, no, I ended on September.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah. And I forget the other one. That's not terribly interesting, but yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah. Cool.
That's awesome.
Chris came and he barely spent any time with us. He was out walking the entire time.
Seeing the sights at the show, or he was out in Portland more broadly?
Out in Portland itself. He was only at the show for a few hours. He came to see the live panel, which was nice, but no, that's I don't feel slighted. That's what I expected. That's what he was out there to do, was to explore a new city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
But PRG is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What time was that for you guys?
What time?
How many times have you been out there?
Okay, this is our sixth year going to the convention or the expo or whatever they call it. Mm-hmm. And this is our fifth year doing a live show.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I don't know. A lot of fun. We shared a booth with the Retronauts guys, and that was real cool.
Nice.
You shared the meetup with the Retronauts guys as well, right?
Yes. That just makes a lot of sense for us.
Contributing to the aforementioned drinking.
Right. And there were people who bought drinks whose name I forget, and that's just a risk that people take. I know one person's name was Austin who bought us a drink, but that's because he was the first person to buy us a drink that night. So, a lot of work. My feet are all torn up. As you hear, my voice is a little rough. I spent most of the day today sleeping it off. I did go into work for a couple of hours in the afternoon, then came home and slept it off some more. And after this, guess what? I'm going to sleep it off some more. when your job doesn't really involve you leaving your house a weekend in a strange city around a lot of people, it becomes this thing, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So, oh, well, yeah. Any other stories from other people? I feel like I monopolized this.
I got to see my nephew over the weekend, and I got to see Dennis over the weekend. So.
That's right. Yeah. You were here in the area.
Yeah. You safely left the city, so it was safe for me to come to Cincinnati.
I mean, by court
it's
order,
It's
$5
you owe him. Come on, Ben.
Yeah, it was cool. It was good to see family and everything, and it was a nice short trip.
Nice. Was it just a bunch of, like, home visits, or did you go do anything cool, or was it in and out?
Yeah. Basically got to see that my brother and his wife were very sleep deprived, so basically just buying them things so that they didn't have to, so that they could maximize their sleep time.
Right.
It's like, here's some food, here's diapers, like, go to sleep.
Yes. Here, have this array of casseroles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But outside of that, I got to hang out with friends one night, and we got to play Secret Hitler, which was fun, and I got to, I picked up something that I'll talk about in the grind. So,
Secret Hitler, is that like a werewolf variant?
Yeah, pretty much. It's a party game. You play with, you know, the more people, the merrier, pretty much. I think it maxes out at 10 people. Some people are fascists, some people are liberals, and one person is Hitler.
Okay.
Only people with complete information are the fascists. They know who Hitler is, and they know who the other fascists are. Liberals don't know anything. Hitler doesn't know anything outside that he's Hitler.
Basically the opposite of America.
Jeez. So the idea is that Hitler is always paranoid.
He's secret and he's paranoid, and the premise of the round system, instead of like voting people to kill or whatever, you're voting to pass things, and you're pass like bills, and it's either a liberal bill or a fascist bill.
Okay.
And if fascist bills get passed, progressively terrible things happen. So like, you can investigate somebody and look at what their identity is, or you can start killing people, or Jesus. Basically just do things that fascists do. And then if Hitler is ever elected to this position after a certain point, then the game is over. So the goal is to not elect Hitler.
So it sounds like it's a game. So I see the title every once in a while. I think, oh, that is a bunch of like edgy garbage. But it sounds like it's actually like made with a certain amount of like, we are trying to communicate something essential about fascism here.
Yeah, there's like some good undertones, I guess, as far as like showing accuracy of a coup, maybe a secret coup happening. So
right.
There are some good bad undertones.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not. I mean, you don't get anything real pleasant when you go into a game called Secret Hitler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. Oh. Dennis, you were saying something.
I was going to say I'd be interested to hear about Secret Hitler on the grind, but I already did, so we're good.
Sorry. I'll have more to talk about later.
No, it's fine. I should have just saved the questions for later, but I was just curious. David, it sounded like you were going to say something?
Yeah, at a martial arts seminar this weekend, so I had a instructor come in from... I think he's in London now.
Okay.
And another come in from Dallas. So it was a really good time, although I got beat up pretty good. I've sprained both my big toes and I think at least one finger. Ew. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But
I'm going to imagine that your uncertainty as to where they come from is because they all have secret bases of operation.
Right. Yes, they could be, you know, Ra's al Ghuling you a little bit.
To be fair, the guy I'm not sure of, he lives his I don't know, home country or whatever is Ghana, but he does close protection work. So I'm not entirely sure where he's actually working right now.
Right, his particular movements. Didn't one of, you know, that is a story I'm not sure if you told it on the air or off, so I'm going to leave it off.
Sure.
Right. But yeah, no, these you're suffice to say the point was going to be that your instructors sound like interesting people.
Yeah, and it was actually kind of cool cuz particularly the fellow from Ghana, or not from Ghana, actually from Dallas. I haven't seen in a couple years, so it was really really good to be able to see him again. And you know, you learn different things from different people. You know, everyone has a kind of a different approach to, you know, how they move, how they make the techniques work, stuff like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it was a good time. I learned a lot.
Awesome. Nice. Cool. Well, that sounds like some banter to me. And my voice, I can feel, is rapidly giving out because I didn't really talk today at work. So why don't we do the usual kind of show, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. and get started with The Brief. The Brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. I think the lesson here, people sometimes ask, like, hey, Cole, how do you not lose your voice while you're doing this? Well, you know, just you get practice and it's a muscle, you work it out. But I can talk all day long, as long as I don't have to speak above a certain volume. If I'm speaking over music all day, that immediately turns this into a goddamn nightmare, is what I have found and what I have seen. Ben, you've got
you
a story.
You just need to practice the drill sergeant technique. You know, learn to just yell at all times.
We did that play. We did what was it? Hard Candy. When we were in high school, not the crazy like murder fantasy movie. No,
all right,
different Hard Candy. It was like a collection of like short little play kind of things. About,
only a little bit of murder.
A little bit, yeah. Ben, I somehow knew you were gonna say, wait a minute, what?
Yeah, no, I was gonna say that's an edgy drama teacher there.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was about like just a series of progressively stranger job interviews. And I played a drill sergeant. That fucked my voice up doing that. Because I really got into it and I had no restraint behind it, so the drill sergeant thing would never actually work for me. I don't think. I think I have to be right on top of a microphone for this to work. Hey Ben, what's going on with the Xbox?
They're getting the Xbox One is getting more Xbox games, which kind of sounds cool. They're releasing 14 of the games. I was interested in the story because I know somebody who works on the backwards compatibility team, so. This was interesting to me because it's probably work that he worked on. But some of the titles are actually really cool, and I kind of have a little bit of interest in. So I don't if you guys click on the story and see any of the 14 titles that are coming out, I don't know if any of those strike your fancy or not, but the ones that I thought were interesting were Fusion Frenzy and Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. So they made it backwards compatible, so you can buy it on the Xbox Marketplace if you want, and it's playing the original game on the new hardware. So like that's kind of work they do is just translating it so that they have like an Xbox emulator on the Xbox One, and so it's basically running it on that. But there's some like game specific code that they have to change each time. But the cool thing about it is you can put in an original Xbox disc into the Xbox One, and it'll play that game. So you don't even have to buy the game on the marketplace if you already own the game.
Yeah, you don't have to have bought it twice, but they make them available. So if you want to play Black, like I would like to play Black, you can just buy it for $9.99.
Yeah, and I think that's an awesome move. Like I think that's like such a better service compared to the other consoles where you just have to like rebuy something every generation.
It was very funny because this was announced, I think, on like Friday or Saturday or something like that, right before the show. One person came up and they were showing their friend at our booth. They were showing them this thing they were really excited about. Like, oh my gosh, I got Blood Rain 2. And I'm like, okay, like Blood Rain, like it's a kind of sexually gratuitous, like, you know, just character action game. I'm like, why are you excited? I didn't say that part, but I was like, oh, what's exciting about Blood Rain 2? Like, did you play it back then? Like, no, they just announced a whole bunch of games. Like, so all I can imagine is there was this group of people who knew what games were on this list because they were reading the news and were seeking them out to buy them.
Off of the secondary
market. Because I look at a lot of these, and these are games that you would see, like, in a bin.
Uh-huh.
Somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, Fusion Frenzy, for sure.
Yeah, grabbed by the ghoulies.
Fusion Frenzy's great, by the way.
I remember seeing that around the dorm room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never actually played it.
It's a good minigame game.
Yeah.
Have we ever discussed Blood Rain's casting decisions when Uwe Boll made it?
No.
I'm sure they were good, right?
Yeah, that's one where he decided it was too expensive to hire actresses and just hired prostitutes instead and had them act.
Oh, right. Yeah, I remember.
It's a respected profession in Germany. Maybe. I don't know.
But yes, that is maybe. Well, I would say maybe says something about, like, the quality of the source material, but no, it probably says a lot more about him just not giving a shit.
Right. Yeah. He also wanted to make them as cheaply as possible because of the German tax loophole that he was taking advantage of. Hey, do you want to guess how many Blood Rain films Uwe Boll directed?
I have no idea.
Sounds like a game with no right answer. I'll say three, and I'll be sad if it's more.
No, you are actually thinking of 3.5 because he directed three that were Blood Rain, and he directed one called Blubberella that is a scene-for-scene spoof of his own movie, Blood Rain, the Third Reich, except there is a very overweight woman who is cast in the lead role as opposed to the slim actresses that they got to play Rain itself. So 3.5.
Sigh.
If you said four, Ben, I would have said you were wrong. And if you said three, I would have said you were wrong.
It's just no right answer.
Nope.
Except for 3.5.
Yeah. But this is cool. Like, people will be able to play Crimson Skies. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Now that's a good one.
Yeah. I still have my copy of Star Wars Knights of the Republic for Xbox. So even though I don't have an Xbox One, I could theoretically play it on that. But I've already bought it for PC, so it's kind of a moot point.
Right.
So I don't get, why can't you just play everything on Xbox?
Because they have to do game-specific like code changes to get it to run on their Xbox emulator on the Xbox One. And so most of it, like, I know what part of the things that they do is they go into like the assembly code of the game and they have to like insert logic in between whatever the game logic is.
Right.
I wonder what keeps them from just making a virtual machine and running it.
I mean, probably like hardware vagaries. Like, I know that there were a lot of developers. This was especially true on things like the PS1 and PS2, but it's common pretty much everywhere, I believe. Forgive me if I'm talking about it out of my ass, but there's a lot of optimization that is done to make the hardware do things it technically shouldn't do. When people are making games for original hardware, and the problem when lots of teams try to emulate or bring it over, they're not able to replicate those particular like vagaries or externalities when they put it in. That is specifically the case. I'm thinking of. That is frequently cited as a reason why we don't have Red Dead Redemption on PC, was because it was developed primarily for console, and it extended so far beyond, like, into weird little trickery.
So what I'm hearing is that Unity Engine is saving the future of retro gaming.
Yeah, Unity Unreal, yeah. I would say.
Guys, I made the mistake of Googling the Blood Rain Third Reich movie and looking at the related images for their box art.
Uh-oh.
Which, coming up right away, is what I assume is a porno called The Naked Nazi. Featuring lots of swastikas and a sexy lady in a guy doing the Heil Hitler thing behind her. It's,
and now you're on a list.
Now I'm on a list.
I don't like the Nazi heavy thing this episode's doing. That's not us.
No, well, we can drop that.
Might as well mention the Nazi who played Yahtzee, which is on BoJack Horseman, which is a fictional movie.
Okay.
Get all the Nazi references out of the way. I'm all out now.
Sorry.
Yeah, we discussed the Nazi soon to be visiting our illustrious alma mater.
Oh, jeez, I'd rather not. I actually, that will get me, like, legit depressed as opposed to just like, haha, we talked about that a lot, didn't we? Anyway, I've got a story, if we don't have anything more to say about that. Not just about the Xbox One, but another early 2000 system, the GameCube. Specifically the fact that a kind of stealthy feature in a recent update to the Switch has made it so that the GameCube controller adapter for the Wii U functions on the Switch itself.
Hey!
Now, this is an accessory that was put out. Nintendo did their thing and only made like 5 of them, and they became pretty rare. But, you know, it plugs into one USB and it has 4 GameCube controller ports. And this was done specifically to let people play Smash Brothers on the Wii U without having to, you know, accept a compromise by playing with the Pro controller or any of the other means that are afforded to you, right?
So this continues the Nintendo approach where someone just suggested, hey, why don't we just make a GameCube controller? And then that person was immediately fired.
Maybe. But they will continue making, you know, replicas of the old GameCube controllers and then selling you the thing that will plug them in. This is notable for the Switch because nothing on the Switch right now was designed for the GameCube controller. You know, you can have external controllers on the Switch. I like my Pro controller for it an awful lot. What this implies is that something is coming that will require a GameCube controller or will be made better by having one, you know. And so that means there are, you know, announcements in the offing. Either
Is there not a Smash Bros. For the Switch yet?
No.
Ah.
It'd be a very good match for it, wouldn't it?
Is there any uncertainty about what this is going to lead into?
Well, I mean, so it could be that. The uncertainty that I'm thinking of, the uncertainty that has popped up in the articles that I've read looking at this, what people are saying is this is an indication that we're going to get some kind of virtual console for the Switch itself, up to and including GameCube games.
Oh, I could see that.
Which was a minor rumor very early on in the system's lifecycle. There is currently no virtual console. There are just kind of costly updates and, you know, remakes of early Nintendo arcade games. I just don't want anybody to get us on a technicality there. But there is not a virtual console on it in the sense that there was on the Wii U and the 3DS.
Hmm. I feel like I can't say anything about this story because it would just be me making the same joke about Nintendo's incompetence over and over again.
I mean, I don't know. It's if they are preparing for this, it is a good thing that they're making it available. Like that is an existing piece of hardware that has always plugged in through USB. Our new thing has USB ports. Well, hooray, let's do it. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah, be fair, is better than the Apple approach.
Well, I guess. What were you gonna say, Dennis or Ben?
I was gonna sing praises of the Switch and say that I think it's a pretty well designed console. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I've been laying on the sugar, laying that on my Switch a lot. Oh man, I put in my order for Mario Odyssey today. I'm so excited.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. Any other thoughts about this, about potentially using a GameCube controller on a Switch?
It's got to be Smash Bros.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
I think the only question is whether it's a new one or an old one.
Oh, yeah.
That's fair.
Yep, Brawl Switch Edition. Fuck. Yeah. That would be bad. I don't want that. It wouldn't make them happy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think anyone would make them happy, but I don't think that what Ben said would make them happy. Hey, David, what's the story you got for us?
Sure. So it turns out that Bungie decided to cancel the Trials of the Nine, which is their event where once a week over the weekend, they have sort of a mini pseudo PvP tournament where you play, I believe it's 9 games, and if you can go a certain number of if you can get a certain number of wins, you can basically get access to exclusive gear. Okay. So I believe the like top tier is basically getting 7 wins in a row. However, apparently, some players had determined that one of the in-game emotes, which is basically the Bureau of Silly Walks from the, was it MyPython Flying Circus?
Yes.
Allows you to basically glitch through walls.
Okay.
And whoopsie. Yeah, so, and in order to maintain the integrity of the tournament where everyone can win, they decide to cancel it for 2 weeks.
Huh.
So,
did they cite a reason?
I mean, they cited emote glitches. But I think that's basically what the issue was. So I guess, I don't know, there's a couple of angles on this. You know, one is questioning kind of why they care, or at least why they didn't just take out the ability to, you know, do emotes in PvP.
Yeah, I mean, there's a million other ways to tackle it, for sure.
Yeah. And then also just, I don't know, I find it kind of entertaining that, you know, letting you, you know, emote that basically lets you, you know, waddle and goose step around.
Again with the goose steps, come on,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Don't think we don't know what you did.
enables you to, you know, cheat at PvP.
Huh. Well,
Monty Python OP.
Oh, geez, what if that happened in West of Loathing? Oh, no, that would be that'd be terrible. You could just walk to, you could walk right to Frisco. Come on. Get it together. Yeah.
Step into Frisco.
So, so here's just kind of a cultural question about Destiny. Does anybody use emotes?
Not too much, although there are some really, really good ones. Notably,
have you done any raiding, David?
Huh?
Have you done any raiding?
Just a little bit.
Okay. Emotes is like what you do on any of the elevators.
Oh, yeah.
So they are there at least in one place in the game.
Yeah, so there's I think some of the favorites I've seen is there is a Jala approved emote where you materialize a table in front of you and flip it over.
Oh, wow.
There's one where you basically materialize a series of like five bottles in front of you and then kind of do the finger gun thing and proceed to, you know, shoot each of the bottles.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, just stuff like that. Like they really run the gamut from like that. And then there's also just like the generic, like point at someone and give them a thumbs up.
My favorite is they have the funny bird dance from Arrested Development.
Cuckoo.
You can almost hear your character, you know, saying that if they weren't a silent protagonist.
Right.
I know. That's about it. The only time I use it actually is I like to have the like thumbs up emote just because like that's the, since there's no voice chat in like the overworld, that's the only way to like communicate thanks to someone if they like help you out with something you're doing.
Right, it's like hearting a tweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to guess that this event being canceled has made the players of this online game angry?
I'm not sure people care that much.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, that... I really feel bad that every time we talk about Destiny, it's somewhat negative.
But, you know, last week I went full on love fest on Destiny. So
right,
I
right.
Okay, cool. I don't know. It exists in a really weird spot in that, you know, it's luckily it's something that comes up every week. So it's, you know, it's not like, you know, if they booched up like you know, once a year, you know, event or something like that.
Right. Huh. Oh well.
It's also it is one of the ways to get powerful gear though, and there's only so many of those a week. So I'm wondering
That's true.
For someone, you know, someone who's still trying to climb that gear ladder, you've just crossed an option off the list for him. So I'm actually surprised. Well, I haven't followed this announcement at all. I'm surprised the outrage has not been loud enough to reach my ears unaided.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Trials of the Nine right now is that thing I intend to do each weekend and then don't right now. So when it comes back, though, then that will be our excuse to get a posse together and probably get murdered.
Yeah.
Posse, is that the unit of measurement they use for a group of people?
Oh no, it's fire team.
Ah, okay.
Which the collective noun for that I would love to hear.
Yeah, actually, I don't know how I forgot that, because they feel the need to, particularly in PvP, remind you of that, like, very often.
Oh, by the way, just totally random aside, David, playing PvP, have you ever had, there's like a commentator who will announce stuff, you know, as you're like kill streak or whatever. Have you ever had him just go, I love you?
No, is that a thing?
He definitely did that to me.
Was that somebody whose voice sounded remarkably like that person popping in?
Maybe, but it was in the context of like, point captured, I love you.
That honestly, like, I will continue to reiterate, like, the commentary for PvP continues to be one of my favorite parts of the game.
Yeah, so for reference, if that is in there and I did hear correctly, that wouldn't be out of character with the commentator.
Right, right. Huh.
He's just so actually happy everyone is training.
That's actually, I'm going to kind of save this because that's something I'm going to a little bit talk about in my grind. But I also really love the, there's a new commentator for the Iron Banner event, and it's equally ridiculous. So, but that's, yeah, I'll leave that for the grind. But one other minor story thing, Vermintide 2 is a thing.
Oh, they announced it?
Yeah. So I actually saw a bit of a kind of stream, not let's play, but like kind of a preview stream of it. Apparently they're broadening out the class system and implementing the Chaos faction as a additional enemies to the Rat people.
Okay.
So and I guess in Warhammer lore, like kind of similar to how in Game of Thrones, the White Walkers are their kind of analogy for the Norse invaders, the Chaos faction is basically that in Warhammer.
Okay.
I watched a little bit of the stream too. I saw the guy using a spear, which looked fun. So
yeah.
Broadened class system and hopefully broadened weapons as well.
Yeah, it also looked to me like I couldn't tell if maybe some of this was just like this person was playing on much higher video settings than I ever did, but it seemed like they had maybe improved some of the animations with like hit registration. So like at one point the guy was using a big two-handed hammer, and it seemed like there was a lot more like if you know, if he would hit someone like near the joint, they would kind of you know bend over or buckle over like at that point, sort of, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But
either way, there's a name for it. I'm spacing, but it's like animations where part of it is ragdoll, part of it is pre-scripted, blended together to give stuff that reacts to the physicality of what you do while still not just kind of flopping over. It was big in the original Resistance game. That was like their big selling point of what they were doing. That was new.
I think my favorite, like, this is a complete tangent. My favorite animation technology or whatever, though, is will always be I forget what it's called, but the one that the original Halo used, where basically it was animated you know skeletal animations or whatever, but then it would adjust them to fit your environment. so you could, that's why you could tell things where like when someone got blown up, oftentimes they would sort of like slide slightly before or after the animation fired.
Okay. Huh. Cool. Dennis, you have a story for us.
I do. I didn't drop a link into the chat because I wanted to do my story as a game. D- Didn't want to give you guys too much information. Yeah. So this will be a quick one, but Overwatch has started announcing names for its pro teams. So Overwatch League is a big thing. You know, sports investors are getting in. There's like teams based in cities the same way for actual sports leagues. So there's been four announced.
So hard right now.
There's been four announced so far. I'm going to give you five, and I want you guys to guess which one isn't the real name. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Focus here. We have the Los Angeles Valiant, the Dallas Fuel, the San Francisco Shock, the Shanghai Dragons, and I should say these are internet. This is international, so it's not out of place that that's there. And then the New York Weed Boners.
fuck you. I'm gonna say the LA Valiant.
Yeah,
that's all.
I'll go with San Francisco Shock.
that's all I got.
Yeah, maybe Shanghai.
Yeah. Okay. Wow, that you caught me off guard with that because see what you did there was you made me lean in and then you cut one.
Yep.
I've got to say though, those are all awful names.
Well, Fuel, yeah, especially Fuel, because it's like we are owned by Big Oil. So we're the Fuel.
Yeah, San Francisco Shock, I don't understand what that means.
Yeah, they have earthquakes.
Oh, that's also insensitive.
It's cool that, no, they've done, that connected something, that their little logo under their written name is like a Golden Gate thing, only it's done up like it's a seismograph, so.
Yeah.
It's multiple layers of insensitive there.
Yeah. Oh, well. So is it Blizzard that is naming these or are they like trying to basically, I don't understand what the league structure is and I don't know what's keeping this from being like the actual weed boners.
Yeah. Know? Well, part of it is just they've made it so expensive that only serious businessmen are going to get into it. Businessmen or women,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And 4chan.
Right. And I think I have to imagine they're retaining some control because right. This is all happening on a Blizzard platform. But the announcements that I've seen, like the actual place where I read about the Fuel being announced and everything, it seemed like it was very inspired by the local owners. So,
right.
Who knows? It is interesting though because a lot of these teams, the way I understand it, is essentially like, okay, this is Cloud9 now. We kept the gang together.
Yeah.
But
yeah, see, I'm really torn with this. Like, I really like the idea of like people, people being able to, like you said, like be successful at this and, make money at stuff they love. On the other hand, I just really dislike the idea of people calling video games sports.
Hmm. I don't know. I more and more get turned off whenever video games try to be or say they're something that they're not.
Yeah.
This is we have talked to death the notion of the notion of esports and do they apply, etc. My cringing at this is more just that like these are bad names because they sound like third rate like triple minor league hockey teams from those given areas,
like XFL teams.
Yeah, they sound like XFL or arena football teams.
Can we just name it after a goddamn real animal?
Although, if they could get Herschel Walker to play Overwatch, I would watch the hell out of that.
Who is Herschel Walker?
He's basically was a guy who has succeeded at every sport. So he was.
So it's like the original Deion Sanders.
Yeah, he was a arena football player. Then he almost qualified for the U.S. Olympic sprint team.
Okay.
I believe did qualify for the U.S. Olympic bobsled team and then became a professional mixed martial artist.
Huh. He was edged out by those Jamaicans on the bobsled team, wasn't he? You can say.
you know.
For the U.S. Olympic bobsled team.
Yep.
It's oh. a very confusing. It's a very confusing draft system.
So apparently he also danced a single performance of ballet in Texas, and he also has a fifth degree black belt in taekwondo just, that he got. Yeah,
he just did that to say he did.
Yeah.
He mains Genji, so he should be fine in the Overwatch League.
Cool. No, where my mind went was forcing the football commentators to comment on Overwatch. Like, don't give them any kind of book. Don't let them know anything. But just put Terry Bradshaw in a very uncomfortable room.
Like, it's a sport. You understand sports, right? You should be able to commentate. Slam the door.
I'm typically super impressed by like the Magic commentary I see when it's like online on Twitch. Like, they're very knowledgeable about all the different cards that they have in their deck and stuff like that.
Oh, good commentating is it is half education and half like professional insight. It's great.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, man. I bet if you I bet you could, like, for example, write a computer program that simply took say from football, like, lines of commentary from when the team was, like, either gaining or losing ground, sync those up to, you know, when a team in Overwatch was gaining or losing ground, and most people could not tell the difference. Like, not saying this at all as, like, a criticism of, like, people who watch it or the game or anything. Just saying, like, I feel like the nature of it, I still feel like, Well, I totally agree that it's, you know, a big part, you know, education and actual commentary. It's also a big part enthusiasm.
Oh, true. Like the amazing Simpsons goof where they have Kent Brockman commentating soccer, and it's like, and he kicks it, and it's returned. He kicks it, and it's returned, and timeout. And then it cuts over to, like, the native Spanish speaker who's commentating, like, he kicks it, it's returned, he kicks it. Boy, I wish I didn't do that accent. But yes.
What was that accent?
I don't know. I don't know what it was.
It was the accent of enthusiasm.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So that's a joke I saw in The Simpsons a while ago. Somewhere between
trying to build up a secondary theme to the show.
Right. Yeah. It was somewhere between 25 years ago and 5 days ago. So could have been any of those.
I do feel like one cool thing about this is I feel like of the esports there are in the world, Overwatch strikes me as one that would probably be by far the most interesting, just because, you know, seems like there's the, you know, the most going on, and, you know, kind of the most dynamicness, that word in that tense.
I feel like we've talked about this before. Like,
the dynamism. Theory, yeah.
Dynamism, yeah. There you are. In theory, yes. However, in practice, I find it almost unwatchable, because they always fix the camera on Tracer. And she is the character that jumps randomly, you know, several feet to the side or forward without any warning in the game. And, like, so it's disorientation, the game.
I feel like what you really need to do is every Overwatch team needs to, I don't know, say it's 4-on-4, they need to have a designated fifth man that plays as Lucio and just, you know, like, wall runs across the, you know, around the stage to serve as their cameraman.
Sky cam.
Yeah. Or, you know, Blizzard should just get their shit together and make a camera person, observer, that could be thrown to.
It. Okay, they've cool. got that. They just, yeah. they love snapping into first-person view.
Right, right.
And they seem to always do it on the worst characters. And it's like, those are the fast characters with the cool, like, duels are happening in the one-on-one situations.
Yeah.
But it also, since you don't have your hand on the mouse, it's just completely unintelligible.
Yeah,
see,
yeah.
It's funny, that's kind of me for football. I can only watch football in person because, you know, I'm not that much of a sports fan in general, or football in particular, but I can follow it as long as I can at all times see the current state of the field. But as soon as I'm watching it on TV where they're switching views, I can't tell which team is, you know, trying to go in which direction.
Huh. The cameras are always on the same side, though. Pro tip. Mm-hmm.
They never break the 180.
I don't know. It seems like I see like a lot of, you know, like side views and
they do the sky cams, the Lucio cams.
That can't be what those start to be called.
I don't know. I'm just saying I really like the idea of not only are we going to have like professional game players, we're now going to have professional game photographers or whatever.
Yeah, people who know how to compose a shot are going to be valuable no matter what.
Well, that's like the like skyboarding, where people are essentially skydiving with like snowboards attached and doing cool flips, where like you can't judge that because they're too high in the air, so you dive with a cameraman and they're judged as a pair.
Yeah,
that's like as long as we're doing just stupid getting sidetracked. I liked what was that TV show, Survivor Man or whatever. I remember they had a ad campaign for it once that was basically talking about the fact that, like, you know, kind of the real MVP is the cameraman. And it's funny because they show a series of the shots from the show, except, you know, they're all cut like 5 seconds longer than they actually were in the show.
Uh-huh.
So like you see, you know, him like jump out of a moving Jeep, and then all of a sudden you see the camera like jump out of the Jeep and do a tumbling roll.
Right.
And you realize, oh shit, there's someone who actually had to do all the stupid things he's doing while carrying a camera.
Yeah. It's like they said, you know, yeah, Gene Kelly was impressive, but Debbie Reynolds had to do it backward and in heels.
Yep. You know?
We're going to end on that, I guess.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, this is really the question that Angie asked the nice people. She posted this during our free play last week. It was the very bottom of the list and we didn't get to it, but it seemed something to me that was worth putting out to the larger crowd. So the question inspired by her is, even fantastic games can have frustrating rough edges. If you could change something in an already great game, what would it be?
Let's pick some nits, guys. David writes, ability to label stickers in Breath of the Wild so I could remember what food or weapon was in that spot. Yeah. Calling them stickers is right, because it's not really information pins. You have to devise your own kind of heuristic for what each and every one of those means. So, like, yes, this could mean food, but that doesn't mean an awful lot when I'm trying to go into a place where the cold weather is up and I need peppers, and I just look at, here's a bunch of food.
Wait, that's the exact opposite of how peppers work.
I'm talking about the video game. if you make spicy food, it gives you some cold resistance.
Like,
yeah.
In real life.
Yeah, I follow.
Yeah. it's like a humor's interpretation okay. of it. Yeah.
Pro tip: in real life, spicy food helps when it's hot.
That probably explains that it is very popular in warmer climes.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's see, David. What does John say?
John said, I would shave down each dungeon in Persona 5 by 20% and rewrite a couple of confident links. Cuff and cuff.
What is a? Does anyone here know what a confident link is?
Confidant link. I'm not sure that it means.
It's when you're playing Zelda and Link just feels really good about him.
Because Persona 5 has this bank heist kind of theme, I could see them doing something with confidant and like, oh, like this is the person that you confess everything to. So maybe it is either a special kind or an incredibly difficult kind of social link.
Yeah, build relationship to get more abilities.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so I guess I guess Anne's confidant Link is not that great. Yeah, shave everything about Persona 5 down 20%. Then you have an 80-hour game, and that is still way too long.
But then wouldn't it be Persona 4?
Yeah, we're remaking it again, guys.
Mathematically, you are correct. That's great.
Yeah, Ben, what does Allison say?
Allison says, let me tell you about a certain elevator in Dark Souls 2.
Allison, stop trolling me, please. I know you're a very nice person.
This is the second week in a row for directly aimed passive-aggressive remarks.
I suppose. No, that's just funny. I find it very amusing that the one thing that would make somebody not like Dark Souls 2 is the fact that elevator goes up and not down. You know about the problematic elevator in Dark Souls 2, right?
No.
Okay.
I missed this one.
The elevator from Earthen Peak to the Lava Keep, Molten Keep, something like that. It goes, you would think that riding to a place full of lava, you would ride the elevator down, especially because you couldn't see anything above the mountain where things took place in Earthen Peak. But instead, the elevator goes up to the Molten Keep. I know I'm getting that name wrong, but that is how thoroughly I've purged everything about that since we stopped doing that show. you ride your elevator up, and this was a totemic issue for people who didn't like Dark Souls 2 when there were much more substantial problems with that game that I would feel a lot better about people latching onto.
Mm-hmm.
So Allison is making fun of just a controversy that came up throughout that entire season.
Controversy is like such a,
though, I mean,
makes it sound so dignified.
Yeah, it does. I suppose it's pretty overblown. Yeah, man, that was a shitty year. I love Dark Souls 2 an awful lot, but 2014 was really rough for that show and for this world. Ben, what does, or no, you just did, Allison. Dennis, what does Jeremy say?
He says, obvious answer, but the last hours of Bioshock. I like how much time you spend in the world after the twist, but wish the time was more about the protagonist asserting his own identity and making his own choices. How you do that, I have no idea. Won't fault Irrational for having trouble there, too.
Yeah. Make it more open, let you fuck up more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Would be, I don't know how you do that, but those are kind of like broader things.
Yeah. It is true, though. You get to a very well-earned climax in that game, and then it keeps on giving for a good long time.
Yeah. Not that crazy about it. I mean, I like Bioshock 2 enough, but I know what people are complaining about when they talk about the last half of that game. Jeremy writes, that one that we just said, Raghavan writes, honestly, it would be amazing to have the ability to skip past or speed up the mumbly character dialogue in Okami. I love that game, but man, does that opening cutscene go on forever. The whole game could also probably be like 20% shorter. Again, we get that 20%. I know it makes Persona 5 into Persona 4, but Persona 4 is still a very good game. no, 20%. Like that's what everything should be shorter by.
Would that make it Okami 4/5?
No, I think it would make it Okami X 0.8 divided by 2 Nights of Sleep Kingdom Hearts. Yeah. Yeah, the opening to Okami is a drag. I love the gimmick of that. I love the art style. But boy, I just want to go to a dungeon and do some cool shit. Oh, well. David, what does Franz say?
Franz says, Psychonauts is an almost perfect game, except it's in the wrong genre. Rather than the 3D platformer collect 'em up, it should have been a point-and-click adventure or a No More Heroes-style action game.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Oh,
sure.
And he also says, likewise, Grim Fandango should have been a point-and-click adventure instead of a weird Trank controls monstrosity.
Yeah.
Luckily, they fixed that in the remaster.
I'm glad that Raghavan said that, because I would have corrected him and I would have felt like a dick. Not Raghavan, Franz. I'm one off like all the time. No, I would have corrected them on that. Psychonauts, the writing is good and the play is questionable, and that just continues a trend that Double Fine has.
Is that just a a consequence of, like, most people don't like 3D platformers, or is it specifically, like, to even for the genre, like, it has some flaws?
Even for the genre, you know, it made some pretty bad decisions about camera and perspective, especially in some time-limited sections toward the very end of the game. They heightened the difficulty by doing things that their engine and their skill in developing platformers were not quite up to handling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Psychonauts is a fine game, though. It's fine. I'm curious what Psychonauts 2 looks like, but we'll see it in 7 years. Mm-hmm. Ben, what does Chase say?
Chase says, the UI in Dragon's Dogma is, to my recollection, hard to navigate, and absolutely could have received some polish. Also, the game itself doesn't have fast travel, which isn't great after the fifth time you've left the main hub city. All of that said, it's been years since I have played it, so this could all have been patched and fixes later.
Yeah. I'll be honest, the lack of lock-on, Dark Souls-style lock-on in that game, keeps me from ever being able to play it.
Does that get in the way of fighting just like regular size enemies? Because if anything's gigantic in Dark Souls, I don't lock onto it anyway.
Okay, I know. I tend to lock onto everything in Dark Souls, but mainly it's a problem with smaller enemies, and it's things where there's a lot of times where Basically, friendly fire is always on, and it's very, very punishing if you attack a wandering merchant that's being attacked by monsters. And it's almost impossible not to, since there's no way to actually lock on to the enemy you want to be fighting.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's being remade for PS4. I wonder if that has, because this is like its second or third remake. Yep. I wonder if that's actually going to iron that out and add that functionality.
I'd really like to see it, because it has some really neat ideas. And I kind of like just its ridiculous inverse Iron Fist kind of premise.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Greg say?
Greg says, this is easily fixed these days by playing the game in emulation or on a clone system with save states, but I wish more classic NES games had either a battery or password. Games like Super Mario Bros. 3 are really long to play through, and I often left my NES on for days at a time so as to not lose my game progress. Same here. For example, I recall having Little Nemo in for 5 days, or Little Nemo on for 5 days straight.
Yep.
I wonder how much of what we think of when we talk about little kid patience was shaped by the really shitty save systems of video games. Like, if we had grown up with modern conveniences, how much would that affect our ability to deal with frustrating situations?
I mean, I think
what I'm hearing is it's time to start a moral panic about how modern save systems are ruining our youth.
Yeah, I think Chris Avalon's got you on that one, or has beaten you on that one. Let me think here. So we would just have to compare and see if little kids today have the same little kid patience that we had. I would say yes for certain tasks, as long as they wanted it a lot. I don't think that our little kid patience came from like a lack of options, because like Nickelodeon was always on, or we could always like go outside or some shit, I think that our patience more came from a sense of really not valuing our time very much.
which funny enough is timeless.
Right. Yeah.
And I feel like now modern kids just, instead they have freemium games.
Right. They can just switch to a new app, but like I see my younger...
Oh, no, I meant more they now just have to level for 5 years to get to the next, content.
Yeah, they're on the curb. Yeah. Tim writes, the naming conventions for spells and attacks in Persona 4 were entirely opaque to me. 80 hours in, and I still have no idea what an item that autocasts the spell Tsukukaja at the beginning of a battle is going to do. Just call it Evasion Up, and I'll pretend that it's super authentic to the Japanese version. I agree with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're not going to, I ran into this problem a lot in when we did Phantasy Star 4 for Watch Out for Fireballs. Just all of the spells in that game, like all the way up through the online iterations, spells yep. and techniques, were they had no bearing on what they actually did. Their names didn't. So you would just like in Final Fantasy, you know, fire. Okay, cool. I can see the root. I can look at an etymology. With that, no, I really wasn't able to.
Yeah. The one good thing, at least in the online version, you had like four spells, so you could basically remember like left is attack, right is heal.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that's
well, I mean, if you're gonna crap. If you're going to do the whole hyper unique name, at least give me a tooltip where I can see it.
Yeah, or make it something evocative.
let's see. David, what does Justin say?
Justin says, I completely redesigned Fallout 1 and 2's UI because it's just the worst.
Yeah. Fallout 1 and 2's UI, you can get over it. I did. But there could be either an easier onboarding experience or they could, make it prettier.
You know, this really isn't mine, but, I think I'd jump in here. I think I would consider, making, Fallout 2, 1 and 2, just, you know, use the system from, Fallout 3. And then make Fallout 1, 2, 3 and 4 be developed by Obsidian.
That isn't a small thing.
There's gotta be a fan project somewhere to both create Fallout 1 and 2 in Fallout 3 and create Fallout 3 and on in Fallout 1 and 2.
Yeah, I'm positive.
What if could I just get 3 and 4 to be developed by Obsidian?
No, I think they're busy.
You can get 3.5 developed by Obsidian.
Yeah, but they already did that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Fallout 1 and 2 fall into the same camp as Planescape. I think that those are wonderful things that transcend their packaging. And anything that gets in the way of somebody experiencing something good is a problem.
Sure.
Yeah. Ben, what does Chris say?
Chris says, Neo would be amazing if it could only tell a coherent story. The mechanic bloat is less of an issue when a compelling narrative makes it so you actually want to play more. I agree.
Yeah, we spoke at length about the mechanic bloat problems in Neo. Mm-hmm. I wish it was a little bit more thoughtfully designed. Let's say that.
But man, a compelling story forgives a lot of sins.
Yeah. I mean, for certain people, it'll do a lot for me. I know from podcasting with Gary so much that a great story will not make something overall great.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's see. Dennis, what does Corbin say?
He says, have a difficulty between easy and normal in XCOM 2. Easy is just a walk in the park, while normal occasionally has horrible spikes in challenge. Amen. So, although if you've played War of the Chosen, I think there is a lot of behind the scenes difficulty spike smoothing going on there. So Corbin, if you haven't, try War of the Chosen. I've experienced and I've read that it addresses this in many ways.
Does that smoothing apply backward to the base game content?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I booted up. Like when you launch XCOM now, you get an option to launch XCOM 2 or XCOM 2 War of the Chosen. Hmm. So I don't know if I went back and launched just XCOM, if it would actually carry over any of the behind the scenes smoothing.
Yeah.
XCOM 2, the expansion is such a complete overwrite of the game. Like, it adds so much to it that it's essentially a new game, and I'd be surprised if they spent much time tweaking the base game when they could be putting more focus into the new stuff.
Well, don't a lot of the mods that you can select also kind of have some effect of smoothing out some of the pacing and some of the just, you know, random rolls and stuff?
Yeah, I think specifically of the Long War mod, which just, as it sounds like, stretches the timeline out very far. I know they've got it for base XCOM 2. I don't know if they have it for War of the Chosen yet. But I think they smooth out the difficulty just by virtue of it makes the game so long that no one event is going to make or break you.
Right. And my understanding is there's, I guess you can do a mode where, like, all of the, it's something along the lines of, like, the time limits for each mission are four times as long, but all damage does a quarter as much.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and the idea is to keep you from, like, you know, having your characters get, like, one shot by a bad roll. But I have no idea. Maybe that's not a thing. Maybe I made it up.
You'll never know.
Until open up the menus and see if I'm lying or not.
Having characters one shot by a bad roll is definitely a thing that happens. Although, see, even as I'm saying that, almost all the time when I have a one-shot situation happen, I can trace the decisions back to what I could have done differently. So, right. But yeah, so try the expansion. I'll be talking about it in a little bit on this episode.
Cool.
And I think it does a lot to address some of those spikes.
Yeah. Guys, I think a lot of these answers were a lot meatier than some of the others. I feel like we didn't go through as many of these, but we have
they
reached
really
time. Yeah. So I'm very sorry we didn't get to your answer. We will try to be a little bit more sprightly in the future. But thank you, everybody, for writing in. Let's do ours. I was reminded of this last week when a recent episode when L.A. Noire came up and how crazy it is that the middle option, Doubt, makes your character fly off the handle. Yeah, I would very much, I think that game would be made an order of magnitude better if they would have changed Doubt to, like, Press or something like that to actually indicate what it was. And I know that, like, calling it Doubt was a last minute decision, and I can't see what they were initially going to call it, but that I think contributed to a lot of people not really enjoying that game as much. Also, remove all the open world elements and just make that a an adventure game if you could.
Yeah, God, if you remove driving from place to place and finding your way on the giant overworld map, how long is that game?
I mean, it's still a very lengthy game because you can skip all the driving anyway.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So it's still, you know, one of the longer games we've done in a single episode of WoW. But make those conversations that you have with your dudes little interstitial cutscenes, and you're mm-hmm. and you're fine. David, how about you?
So, I'm gonna catch you and do two.
Okay.
I think for Far Cry 2, fixing the distance at which enemies can see you, and in particular the distance at which snipers can see you, because I really like a lot of the things that game does, particularly with its inventory system, but especially once you get to, like, midway through the first half of the game, or what most people would call a quarter of the way through the game, if that just makes it almost unplayable if you want to do any sort of stealth. And then I think also for Bloodborne, I would say get rid of having to farm for healing items and bullets.
That is a very, very good one.
And perhaps that one is more my serious answer. Maybe more controversially, I'd say remove the parry mechanic.
Okay. Yeah, that would be more controversial. If you're looking to get people to say amen, I would go with the first one.
Yeah, you know. I'm not starring any religions here. No, I would say on more realistically, make the parry window be the same for all attacks.
Okay. For all weapons that you have equipped, or for all attacks that are incoming?
For all incoming attacks, make it basically find some way to make it so that it's not trial and error.
Right.
Specifically, not trial and error with every enemy.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
I'm going to do a Naughty Dog double tap and say The Last of Us. This was somebody else's opinion that I'm ripping off, but I can't remember who it was, so apologies. But just pointing out that the way they did the AI programming, where like the partners that you might have throughout the game could be just wandering around or whatever, and they won't trigger anything from the zombies, is a little bit hokey in certain spots.
Yeah.
But it's probably a better gameplay decision, so I don't even know if that counts as a flaw. Uncharted 4, though, I'll say one thing that I really didn't like about it is they introduced a new gameplay mechanic in the last boss fight. And that's a little... That was, you know... But you're 99% of the way done with the game, so that's, you know, whatever.
Right.
So I believe there was some The Last of Us commentary from Eric C. on our Slack on this question, even though we didn't get to it. Yeah. Shout out to him.
Yeah. Make your final boss fight a final exam. Don't bring something new.
Also, Dying Light.
Same thing.
They decide to implement the final boss fight entirely as a QuickTime event, and there are no other QuickTime events in the game.
I remember you talking about that, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Dennis, round us out here.
Yeah, so semi-jokingly, I would love a non-poop Isaac mode for Binding of Isaac, or also called There's a Stranger Sitting Next to Me on the Plane mode.
Right.
Because it's the perfect game to play on trips, unless you're sitting next to someone and then you worry about having to explain what the hell you're doing.
Yeah.
To be fair, couldn't you close your eyes, pick an indie game, and have a 50% chance of... basically having chosen a non-poop Binding of Isaac?
Trenchant commentary. No, I don't know. Like, what other game have you picked up that was just a reskinned Isaac?
Our Darker Purpose, Enter the Gungeon.
That's fine. You don't need to. Gungeon is very similar. Gungeon is it is a bullet hell Isaac. Yeah, continue. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so that's one. Then also I'll go back and this can pseudo segue into the grind on XCOM 2. The health of your enemy is shown as a red bar with a series of segments. And once you're getting up to enemies with, you know, 15, 20 health, that's impossible to count visually.
Right.
And it would be so easy just to put either a number on the end of that bar or just to like highlight every fifth tick. To make it easy to like tally up. The other problem is while you are aiming, the camera is doing this like kind of not shaky cam, but like it's kind of moving behind the person who's aiming, kind of giving that intense feel,
right?
Which means that you're trying to like follow this stack of 20 something bars and count them while the camera is swaying around. It's impossible. In a game where one health is the difference between a soldier dying and not, because the alien gets an extra turn. So just, you know, I spend so much time, I'll like move out of aiming mode and find the alien on the map and count it up when the camera's not shaking so that I can, you know, do the math and figure out, okay, do I have enough damage to kill him if I low roll, et cetera, et cetera.
That's crazy because like, I feel like second only to EVE Online, I feel like XCOM is basically stats the game.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was on my mind for the amount of time now that I'm facing tougher enemies. I'm spending literally going, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. I lost my place. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
That seems so ill-advised. I mean, just like, why a bar other than, you know, instead of something like a pie chart?
You know? It's
like where you see wedges come out. That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
I can't think, maybe I'm just imagining this, something like that. But it seems like I saw a game recently, you know, like I think this was a turn-based, RPG or something, but that basically would have a percent chance that your next attack or that given attack would kill an enemy. It was through an HP system. It wasn't like, you know, so the percent was the system, but it would just show you, like, based on your damage ranges, how likely it was to, you know, end them.
It's weird. It sounds like you're describing Smash Brothers.
No. Although that's also similar idea, but right. No.
I was going to say XCOM 2, and I think the original XCOM also has a weapon upgrade that gives you a percentage.
They call it XCOM 2 in France.
Stop it. But you can install an upgrade on your weapon that gives you an up to 15% chance to just immediately kill an alien that you shoot. Which is not reliable, but it's cool when it happens.
Of course. Yep. Cool when it happens. Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in. If you want to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and like our page there. These often go up on Tuesday afternoons. Thanks to Dennis and Jala, who coordinate on that. And also this time, thanks to Angie for sending the question that inspired it.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. David, you were not here, so I will throw it to you first.
Sure. So I've been doing a couple things. I've been playing up the Iron Banner in Destiny.
Okay.
So I don't know, Dennis, did you cover any of that last week?
No, I missed the banana cart.
Okay.
They're speaking in codes.
Banner, banana cart.
Makes a lot of the commentary in the Slack's Destiny channel make a lot more sense.
Yes. So you want to play some Iron Banner, you just anyone feeling some bananas?
Fair enough. I just kind of, nodded my head and sort of backed away slowly. So overall, I mean, we kind of spoke earlier that it unfortunately ended up being kind of a letdown in some ways, just because they removed the thing that in Destiny 1 made Iron Banner unique, which was that level advantages mattered. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of unfortunate. But on the other hand, I actually really came to enjoy the game mode they do. So they basically were playing Control, which is kind of their equivalent of like a point capture, multiple point capture type of thing, or like, holding ground type of thing, you know, that sort of thing. But sort of the twist with it, and maybe other games have done this, I just haven't played them, but capturing points actually doesn't give your team doesn't increase your score. It just provides a multiplier on the score you get from killing the other team. So it sort of basically ends up being this kind of interesting blend of, team deathmatch and a objective game match.
Okay.
So that was kind of cool. Although I would say one kind of weakness is that the optimal strategy is very much capture 2 out of the 3 points and then just defend them. because it seems like the majority of the time both teams tend to get a comparable number of kills. So it tends to boil down to, you know, which team is better at holding the points. The problem is that strategy, both in terms of like, hey, don't bother trying to capture the last point, and in terms of like, hey, defense is really, really important in this mode. Both aren't particularly obvious to pickup groups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, overall it was fun, and as I kind of alluded to earlier, there's a different character within the Destiny lore that runs the Iron Banner, and he also then does the commentary for the matches, and I guess it's the same voice actor that does Reaper in Overwatch.
Okay.
But it's just, you know, again, continuing on being just really, really endearing and entertaining. Kind of his stick is that he was like one of the, I think it's five or six sort of original badasses that basically kept things together in the period of time between like the fall of humanity's golden age and sort of the kind of present era that the game takes place in, where humanity has kind of started to rebuild.
Okay.
And so a lot of his commentary is just this, you know, super, super, like, overwrought stuff about, like, how, like, oh, that's how we used to do it in the day. So, like, You'll like, you'll get some rocket ammo, and back in the days of the claps, we referred to that as fun. Like, just completely
what?
Over the top dorky dialogue.
Yeah, that's too much.
But you know, it's one of those things where like I would never want it would get really grating if that was always the dialogue. But it's really, really entertaining for that to be the dialogue for like a week.
Right.
Gotcha.
I think one of my favorites is one of the end of match things. The Lord Shax is the normal commentator, and one of his the ending dialogues you can get it from this new guy is, do you prefer Lord Shax commentating these events? So do I. A busy Shax is a quiet Shax. Like, it's just completely, right. You know, they gave someone free reign to just write the most ridiculous things they could think of.
Right. Because everybody who's playing it is going to be in their Skinner box, so they're not going to call it out.
Well, and just, I think more than that, it's just, you know, it's an event that's overtly for fun. You know, it's,
right.
There's no direct, you know, impact on the storyline. And basically the premise of this is that, you know, this is some old curmudgeon that thinks that, you know, modern Guardians are too soft and is, you know, coming in, you know, to, you know, organize this tournament to, you know, have men be men and women be men.
So they're calling attention to it.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
So, other than that, I've started playing Metal Gear Solid 5.
What?
Hey.
So that was the PlayStation Plus thing for this month.
Yeah, everybody should get on that because this is a very, very good video game.
Yeah, it's weird.
I mean, like, are you basing that on the first hour, or have you gotten into the actual like mission loop of it?
Well, kind of both. In that, like, the first hour of it is really weird and is not at all indicative of what's been going on since then.
In the rest of the game, like the first hour is so not of a piece with like riding around Afghanistan on a horse.
Right. Exactly. Right. And you know, that almost makes it even weirder.
Okay.
So I just feel like so many weird things, like just the basic premise of like how jacked up Snake is at the start of the game, and the fact that like literally they show you x-rays and tell you that you know that you basically have huge pieces of shrapnel like embedded in your brain next to like you know life essential parts of your head.
Uh-huh.
And then proceed to like have you get blown off of a bridge and like be completely cool.
But Big Boss is a badass. Like he's a real hero is what he is.
But he's like the opposite of a baby. He has hard spots instead of soft spots.
Right, right,
exactly. But like he literally has like a chunk of someone else's bone sticking out of his head.
But it makes him look like a demon. It makes him look like the demon that he actually is.
Mm-hmm. In addition to being like Ahab.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Did yeah. Ahab have other people's bones in his head?
Nope.
Okay.
They fused that together.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, just, you know, just in general, like, that you know, the fact that he apparently within the space of a week goes from being barely able to walk to being able to like just do I don't know.
Hey, Ocelot is really motivational, okay?
he does have a very, very soothing intelligence briefer voice.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about them getting Troy Baker to do Ocelot. Like that would have been the time, I think, to make the switch from whoever he was in Snake Eater to Patrick Zimmerman, you know, just have him voice a bit younger. Although fuck, maybe Patrick Zimmerman's dead and I didn't think of that. His voice seems very incongruous to me.
Yeah, see, I have nothing to compare to, so.
So this is your first Metal Gear Solid game, right?
Right, exactly.
Right.
So that's the other thing is, like, I'm still kind of piecing out, like, exactly what's going on with this story.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of references will probably fall flat.
Right.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like there's a combination of that, like, the weird mix-up of, like, you know, it's super, super set in the 80s, except when it would be convenient for you to have a smartphone.
Right, or an e-cigarette.
Right, yeah. Exactly. You know, the fact that, like, I have to apparently develop a, you know, highly trained team of Soviet specialists to get gear that I can get from any army surplus store.
Today?
Back then, you could get freaking, like, I just unlocked ability to have forest camo.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah.
But and just like I haven't quite pieced out like what's going on with the history,
like the alternate history that this game takes place in, right, or the history of the series itself.
More the alternate history, and in terms of like it doesn't appear that anything, you know, it doesn't seem like they're doing like a Watchmen thing where it's like, oh, America won Vietnam. Like, you know, just anything dramatically changed. But at the same time, it also doesn't seem like they're just, you know, it does seem like, you know, they are having over the course of the games, like, you know, the timeline is more and more diverging. Does that make sense?
What you need? Go ahead, Dan.
Ask to someone who hasn't played the previous games. How many of the previous games have you played?
Me? None of them.
Ah, well, there's your problem.
Yeah. So this is not as standalone as something like a Metal Gear Solid 3 would be, or a Metal Gear Solid 1. It relies a little bit on Peace Walker to make you understand how important MSF was, Militaire Sans Frontières, was to Big Boss and to what's his name, Kazuaki, Master Miller, or something like that. You know, you have to understand how important that was. Really, what you need to know at this point is that there is a massive conspiracy that at different points is called either the Patriots or Cypher.
Okay.
That you and everybody else are kind of like working against, that Skullface is working for. And if anything momentous has happened, either fictional or non-fictional in the history of what you are seeing, it is the work of the Patriots or Cypher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. What's the deal with the kind of supernatural thing in this? Like
the parasites, or
I don't know. I just know so far I've seen a dude who's on fire. I think the chick from Fear in a gas mask, and some sort of weird like biohazard suit wearing guys. I'm not very far into the game.
Right. And so those are like a lot of those things that you mentioned are either callbacks or calls forward. It's not supposed to make a tremendous amount of sense until you see it recontextualized at the end. The first hour is kind of entirely off limits for close scrutiny until you see it later.
Okay. In general, though, like, what is, because like, I guess my only other I guess I should say my other exposure to the world would be like Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
That's way after this.
Yeah, that's, but like, there explicitly was not anything in that was overtly supernatural.
Uh-huh.
So like, I guess part of what I'm kind of figuring out is like, I'm not clear yet on sort of what the rules of the world are. Is this a world where like everyone like knows like, hey, there's some crazy super soldiers running around and sometimes shit gets weird? Or is this like, you know, some sort of like sci-fi thing that like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not quite sure like how and what light I'm supposed to be seeing that, if that makes sense.
This is going to sound super glib, and I don't mean this as a joke. Like, a lot of people who say this mean it. So you played Revengeance, and you know how like important nanomachines and stuff are in that, right?
Right.
Right. The nanomachines for this, like the strange, what is it, TV Tropes calls it, applied phlebotonium, or just like the magic thing that makes the stylistic elements work, is parasites.
Okay.
Okay. It is half parasites. No, not half. One third parasites, one third genuine psychic abilities, which happen, and one third the hallucinations of your character because of the aforementioned bone shrapnel.
Right. And basically none of these are things that like your average person or even your average like special forces person would know about.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. So in terms of actual gameplay, overall I'm really enjoying it. It was kind of a rough start there's kind of a weird difficulty curve in that, like, at first I found a lot of the stealth elements really, really frustrating.
Okay.
And then I feel like there then became kind of, you know, one third getting better at it, one third learning the systems, and one third kind of learning some of the idiosyncrasies of, like, the AI and what the game allows you to do.
Okay.
And it's kind of morphed into now a significant portion of my time is just kind of me fucking with the guards.
Oh, of course. I mean, you're scouting out your recruits is what you're doing.
Right, right. And I mean, it's fun to, to just the guards think they're chilling, and then all of a sudden you pop out and everyone freaks out because, you know, No one expects the snakish infiltration.
Exfiltration, because you are tying a large balloon to them.
Also true. One of my favorite things is I really enjoy the fact that if you do that, like, when enemies can... you know, aren't expecting it, they will freak the hell out.
Uh-huh.
Also, I love the having to do that for animals and how paper thin their excuse for why you're doing this is. They basically say that your mercenary company is getting paid by a environmentalist NGO to get animals out of the war zone by literally strapping a weather balloon to them and have them be swooped up by helicopters.
Well, can you think of a more efficient way to do it?
I don't know. My success rate is not always that great.
Stop injuring your animals.
Oh, it's a single tranquilizer shot to the head. So
consider the haunch.
So yeah, and yeah, I don't know, there's just so much weird stuff to some of the gameplay. I kind of enjoy the bullet time effect when you get detected. That seems kind of like a good compromise for the in terms of, you know, allowing you to kind of salvage a stealth run.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, I actually really like the sort of, you'll get the, I think they technically explain it as, you know, something pressing on your optic nerve, making you see things crazy, but you'll get these sort of like migraine,
like halos, light, auras, yeah.
Yeah, when a enemy can is basically, it's kind of like a pre-alert stage where it's not at all that the enemy even like knows you're there, but just they vaguely are like having their attention drawn to your location, if that makes sense.
It's a little bit like spider sense.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And it does a really good job of making it a lot less. It allows the AI to be a lot more aggressive with noticing you and coming over to investigate, while at the same time allowing you enough heads up to be able to intelligently, react to that.
Uh huh.
So yeah, overall, I'm really enjoying it. I would say the one criticism maybe I'd have is it does, I'd kind of be interested to get your feelings on this. It feels a little bit like maybe it's a game that kind of the stealth genre has sort of passed it up some. In that, like, it doesn't seem like it has kind of the, like, sophisticated social stealth features of, like, a Hitman or the, the kind of, high speed, fancy maneuvers of like a Fallout, or even ironically enough, the nanomachine son of like a Deus Ex game.
Right. Just like there are different kinds of action, different kinds of horror, there are different kinds of stealth. I think, you know, if they tried to apply this system to sneaking into a crowded place that is otherwise occupied by people doing things besides just looking to kill you, it would fall down. As a base infiltration stealth style game where anybody that you find that you are not specifically trying to rescue will try to kill you, I think that this is kind of top of the pops the stuff that it brings you. It's all about intention, right? Like it's the difference in the stuff that it asks you to do.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, because that's kind of why I wanted to get your read on, because I think, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially since kind of like what I was just saying, like it seems like they have really, really sharpened that mechanic to just a razor edge.
Yeah.
So yeah, I should say also I really like the interrogation mechanic a lot. I don't know, that just seems kind of like a pretty intelligent way for them to kind of fit gameplay eyes you getting that information,
right? You're referring hints. Yeah, the it is a really good hint system. You're referring to if you hold somebody up, you know, they realize you're there, they realize you have the drop on them, you have a couple of options. You can, you know, put them down immediately. You can knock them out so you can Fulton them, take them back to your place, or you can ask them for a particular piece of information, and they will tell you like where your objective is or where something optional is. And optional pickups in this game are really important because of upgrade points and such.
Right, exactly. So I am a little disappointed with some of the hand-to-hand combat, just because that's something that I've heard a lot about and, heard a lot of praise of. And so far, it just seems like the extent of your hand-to-hand combat tends to be, like, punch dudes in the face really, really hard.
Yeah, it's not something that is as good or as, like, situationally diverse as it was in Snake Eater, which was far more clunky, but gave you a couple more options. I think you may be misapplying some praise from one game onto the other.
And that very well could be the case.
Yeah.
So question is, do you think is the whole like thing with your, you know, army you're building and stuff like that supposed to be super, super creepy?
Yeah, a bit.
Okay.
Miller doesn't have it entirely together.
Well, and I guess I meant also though, like, you know, the fact that you're basically just building an army entirely based off of Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. Like when new recruits are sent to processing, you ever wonder where Ocelot is during that?
Yeah.
Yeah, Ocelot's there doing his whole interrogation thing to break their spirit so they join you.
Right.
Yeah.
And similarly, just like whenever you go back to base, like the people just seem a little bit too enthusiastic.
Yeah, they're super happy for you to beat the shit out of them too.
Yeah, like I don't know. It's just really weird. And again, I guess not at all as a criticism, but to a certain degree, a combination of just, you know, obviously this being a video game, and then this being a video game that, you know, a lot of the setting is intentionally weird, and this being a series that's known for being really idiosyncratic, I can't always tell, like, what is weird for what reason, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, I can't give you a blanket rule that applies to everything, because, you know, it is mercurial like that. however, what you are keying into with the with your forward operating bases and stuff like that, you know, that is intentional, I believe.
So one real quick gameplay question: what is the balance or whatever around like the challenges? I guess in terms of like, it seems to be happy to give me like expert ranked unit members for things that take entirely no effort whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that question.
Okay.
Yeah. Like a gift horse in the mouth, I guess.
Yeah. If you're doing good, do good.
I'm used to, I guess, playing games this late. Like, often I'll run into them where it's like, oh yeah, well, you know, 10 patches in, they added this system to make the game super, super easy for the people that hadn't beat it yet.
Right. No, so. Have no idea.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
But, yeah, fun stuff. Running around Afghanistan's kind of crazy, I guess.
Yeah. Anything else about Metal Gear Solid 5?
No. What's your go-to song for your helicopter's intro?
Oh, you should know this, "Maneater" by Hollow Notes. Yeah.
Nice. I'm currently rocking "Ride of the Valkyries."
That's pretty good. I did that until I got Maneater, and then I never looked back. You may be tempted to go with "The Man Who Sold the World," the version that you hear in the opening. Don't do that, because that the lead up to that is not it's way too long.
Yeah,
is the problem.
That's literally what I was about to say. Is that's one that in theory would be really good, but in practice just doesn't work.
Right. So when you load up, like, the reason "Maneater" is great, you know, I don't like this song.
One of the reasons it's great.
Right. I don't like this song. It's been forced on me by circumstances, the problem.
See, Stockholm Syndrome from before.
Yeah, which is, of course, a euphemism for why you're fighting this war.
See, I can't even pretend. I fucking love "Maneater." but by the time the chopper arrives to pick you up at the LZ, guess what you're hearing? You're hearing the hook, okay? You're hearing the like, yeah.
See, I feel like the one I really want, which I don't think's in the game, is "I'm Afraid of Americans."
That would also be pretty good. yeah. Is that all you've been playing, David?
That's all I've been playing.
Okay. I'll relieve some pressure off of Ben and Dennis, because I've not been playing anything. When I was off while I was traveling, I was either sleeping or high. So didn't play a lot of games, didn't take my Switch or anything. But played some pinball. And that was fun. I can't remember. Basically, I sought out when I was at the show any kind of really, really old table that didn't have a lot of frills.
Mm-hmm.
Those aren't very exciting. They aren't very fun. The flippers don't move very fast, so you don't shoot the ball very quickly, which is a bit of a bummer. But it feels a little bit like there are diminished expectations. You know, the high scores are in the hundreds of thousands, not the millions. Stuff like that. One thing that was a little bit annoying about the show itself, because this is the 40th anniversary of Star Wars, every, let's say, fifth machine that I saw on the show floor was the same kind of like generic, hey, this is the original trilogy Star Wars machine, but we made it in the past 3 years, and you can tell because it has a high definition LCD at the top of it.
Oh, sure, sure.
And it was a fine game, but like, most of those were empty, and when I saw there's a Star Wars machine, and I walked up to it and I saw that same TIE fighter in the middle, I was like, oh, it's the same game, Jiminy. Mm-hmm. So that was a bit of a bummer, but yeah, that's all I've done over the past weekend. I did pick up when I was at PRGE, set myself a budget of $50, and I got a copy of Fear Effect for the PlayStation 1. I got Resident Evil Outbreak. I rebought that because I traded it away like a fool a while ago, and also Resident Evil Dead Aim. So those are going to be popping up on streams eventually.
What is Fear Effect? I know I've heard a ton about it, but I can't put a whatever to or whatever.
It is like a non-horror themed survival horror game for the PlayStation 1. Has a pretty distinctive visual style that looks pretty close to what cell shading would eventually become.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's more of like a what if Siphon Filter played and controlled like a Resident Evil game. Yeah, I got it because like everything that I bought, it was about what you had to pay for it on eBay, and just you saw it. I'm happy to own a physical copy because it hasn't been released digitally, which is nice.
Nice.
So yeah. And the one place that I saw selling Drakengard games was selling them for twice what they otherwise should have gone for. And I was like, I'm sorry, sir, but no. Yeah.
That's where it's good to know your budget ahead of time.
A little bit, yeah. I think $50 is a reasonable amount of money to spend in an event like that. That's fine. That is reasonable. I'm a human. So that is all that I have been playing. I will have more next time. Some Mario. Let's say some Mario.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I've got some big stuff. Not necessarily some recent stuff, but I'm going to start with what I'm most excited about is I met a friend this week and got to play with his HTC Vive.
Ooh.
And that was an awesome experience. Started just kind of got warmed up on a game called Space Pirate Trainer, which is a generic, like, hey, you stand on a platform and things come up in front of you and you shoot them, right? And there's some rudimentary, like you can move around to dodge, but it wasn't anything too crazy inspired. But that went straight into the real blockbuster of the play session, which was Super Hot in VR.
Oh, geez, I was hoping you wouldn't say that because I am very jealous.
Oh my god, it's amazing! Yeah, it is the best approximation of what I want to feel like when I play an action video game that I've found.
Had you played Super Hot before?
I had not, and I went back after the fact and looked at some videos to understand. You know, it's got that first person shooter thing where you are moving around and time only moves when you move. Super Hot VR is the same thing, only instead of, you know, walking through the room, it's just all your body motions. You're kind of standing in one place or standing in a relatively small area, and kind of fighting off enemies within that. But that means you are, so, you know, essentially you're doing the entire thing in slow motion. The world around you is moving in slow motion. And it just leads to you feeling like the biggest badass ever, playing the game. And it's, you know, it's, the original Super Hot was this way as well, I'm sure. Kind of one part shooter, one part puzzle game, where you're just trying to figure out the most efficient actions, et cetera, or kind of as you're improvising, making up for unexpected problems, etc.
Right. Like, time only moves when you move, and a lot of people are trying to kill you at once. So what you're trying to do is prioritize the order in which you deal with them so that you kill them before they kill you.
Exactly. But I mean, the when you spawn into a level, there's that moment, and like, because you're in VR, you're literally physically doing this where you're like, all right, you don't really want to move. You're, you know, you're just looking left and right with your eyeballs, like, all right, two on my left. Three on my right. One on my right's got a gun. Two on my left have stars. Shuriken in front of me. All right, let's go. You know, and you know, you start literally, like, you know, I found myself, you know, on one knee firing behind my back and like doing all these crazy poses. Like, and it all made sense with the combat because I pick up my gun with my left hand and need to be shooting the right direction. The most efficient way to do that is to go behind my back. So it's not superfluous at all. It like is a legitimate reason for you to be freaking newing the fuck out.
But yeah, because turning would use the time resource in a way that pointing the gun behind you wouldn't.
Exactly.
Holy shit, that sounds amazing.
It's so cool. The other interesting thing is that punching is you know very closely follows your actual fist movements. The thing is, though, you have to be swinging a certain level of like intensity for it to register. Otherwise, you just kind of like pat the person.
Oh no!
So you like to punch someone like, and a lot of times you start the levels. That's your only resource. But to actually punch someone hard enough to kill them,
yeah, you have is, to you have to move with velocity.
Exactly, yeah, it's a time investment. Yeah, but that leads to these situations where you're, I mean, again, you're getting into even crazier poses where you punch hard forward to knock the guy out in front of you. And then realize that, okay, well, that put me in a bad situation. You kind of just have to like drop or, you know, just you know, then lash out with your left hand in another crazy way. But it's like it gives you the time to actually process and pose like you are this hyper-trained, amazing soldier.
Right.
In a really, really fun way. So I got to play probably six or seven different levels of it. And I was absolutely enamored. So really, really cool. Oh, go ahead.
So when does Amazon deliver the PlayStation VR?
Yeah. I wonder, do they have Super Hot for PlayStation VR? Because if I could not get if I could not get Super Hot on the PSVR system, that would be a deal breaker for me now that I've played this game. Like this is... In my estimation, this is a system seller. This is this could not be done in any other way. And I mean, it obviously started as a first person shooter type of deal with the original Superhot, but the experience is entirely different in a really cool way.
Yeah. Because of the nightmare of searching for anything related to VR, I can't tell you if it's available. I have heard similar claims about Superhot on VR. That it is the most compelling reason to own VR on whatever platform it can run.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Now the you know Space Pirate Trainer game did have some moments as well where I'm you know what it, basically in that game one hand was a shield, one hand was a gun.
Right.
And so you know I did a lot you know some shooting across my body so I could have the shield in one place and the gun in the other. But Superhot just made it you know times a thousand more intense.
Yeah. This person who showed you their Vive really knew what they were doing because like Superhot is a very, very good use case for this.
Yeah.
Also,
no kidding.
It is in fact on PlayStation VR.
Yay. Okay.
Oh, cool.
Okay. That's, man, that's going to make it hard not to go pick up. the one thing that they didn't have, and I don't know if this is just because I was going from the level select screen, but they don't have the replay at the end that shows your movements in real time.
Oh, geez.
And I think partially, I don't know if that's because, you know, it'd be hard to recreate given all the looking that you're doing.
Yeah.
Versus any other technical problems. What
or
is funny
that's
though,
a one way trip to Vomit Town.
It's yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Or I mean, if they showed you it from third person, like, hey, here's so you remember how cool you felt. Here's what you actually would have looked like.
That's why they did do it. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
But like, that's a very good reason to do it because it'd be very funny, and laughing is a reaction. It's a positive reaction that you want to get.
I'd be interested. Yeah, I can't say enough good things. You know, I've done some VR stuff before in a very limited capacity, but this was by far the most compelling example of it.
Well, that's awesome.
Can I bring something up tangentially related?
Yeah.
So there's Oculus just announced that they're coming out with a Oculus Go, which is like, this sounds like product placement, I swear it's not. But it's like a $200 version of the Oculus headset, but the gimmick of it is that the computer is built into the headset.
What?
So, like, you're basically running apps off of that, so you don't have to attach it to a computer at all.
Huh. Yeah, and the computer is powerful enough to do that.
I believe so.
Is
Maybe
it?
I'm completely making it up and it's just wireless, but I don't know.
Yeah, like an Oculus rated machine is still at least $1,000.
Yeah, yeah. And so most of the VR out right now, it looks like it's around, like, $400, $500 on Amazon or $600. So making something that's worth like $200 is pretty big price opposite of a jump. So yeah, I don't know. That just seemed like it was something that was kind of related to this. Cause you can play Superhot on PC through Oculus as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you got a machine that can run it, I recommend it. Like, yeah, man, oh man,
if you have the means. Yeah,
there. That's a better way to say it.
I have no idea how the missions in the VR version differ substantially from the regular, let's say, subhuman version that I have played. You know, the one that is just in two dimensions. Yes.
No,
yes.
I feel like it's not subhuman. It's human and transhuman.
Yes. There yes. The non augmented human version of it. I still found to be incredibly engaging and like just a very inventive first person shooter. You know, if you're looking to sate that, I don't know how much of your, let's say VR lust is for Superhot itself or for the VR itself. Yeah. And maybe the $25 investment in regular Superhot will give you what you want as opposed to going out and spending multiple hundreds.
Yeah, it's a valid question. I, having experienced it in VR, I'm fairly certain that it was very unique to the VR version.
Yeah.
But I say that having not played the base version, so who knows?
Yeah.
I'm disappointed that they did not call it Super Hotter.
Well, that's a sequel. I mean, this is just the VR version. If I didn't give away, like earlier this summer, Dennis, I swear, somebody was talking about it in the games channel on Slack, and I was like, oh, I've got a code for you. Here you go. Have it. Mm-hmm. I was looking for this furiously because I wanted to gift it to you, but I don't have it anymore because I already gave it away.
That's all good.
Yeah. Continue.
Yeah,
so I'm sorry.
Yeah. It was a short amount of time spent with the game, but man, oh man, like that. Like, I get it. I get VR. And I was excited for VR before.
Uh-huh.
But now I understand, like, how truly different it can be, how truly worth it can be. That was awesome. Yeah. So, yeah, shout out to Tim for giving me that experience. Hopefully, I'll get more of it at some point, whether that's in my own living room or through other people who have it or whatever. Yeah. But definitely piqued my interest.
You just know your kids and your wife are going to want to try it.
Oh my god, now I imagine my three-year-old using a VR headset.
And oh no, no. He'll never come out. Yeah. Bye.
Yeah.
Oh, anything else?
That is one of the big new ones. The other big new one I actually talked about last week, which is I went back and found Card Crawl, which was my answer for what game did you feel like went largely unnoticed but you loved.
Ooh.
Which is like the little solitaire variant. And I went and found it, and I'm glad I did because there have been significant updates to the game since I played it. So the fundamental idea of the game, it's based on a 54-card deck, and there's no reason you couldn't play this game with just a deck of cards.
54 being the 52 plus the two jokers?
Two jokers, yep.
Okay.
Yes, indeed. So you basically, the fundamental objective in any solitaire game is to get all the way through the deck. Basically, you'll deal four cards for yourself. Diamonds are cash, hearts are potions, spades are weapons, and then clubs and then face cards are all different versions of monsters and or ability cards. So again, you could do this totally lo-fi, do it without an app or anything electronic, and it would work. And basically you can only hold four items at a time, and you need to get the four cards that are played down to one card before you can get more cards. So basically you pick out cards until you have one, deal three more. And then you pick out cards from that until you have one and deal three more. And then the cards that you're holding, you can then play those onto the four cards to help get rid of them or manage the damage, because monster cards deal damage to your health total. Whereas obviously, shields absorb their damage, swords can kill them, and right, then potions heal back your damage.
Are you worried about legal action for you completely opening up what their game system is?
this is true. I'm getting very detailed here.
Yeah, well, I distance myself from you, like, officially. Don't worry.
Okay,
I've got your side,
man. When
they
come for me, I won't use your name.
Yeah, I'm totally wishing you the best, but I really don't. I don't want anything to do with this.
So now I'm going to talk about my version, Shmard Crawl, which is no. So anyway, it's a fun game. They rebalanced a bunch of the ability cards, and basically there's a deck building component where you can choose Well, in a so you unlock more ability ability cards as you play the game. And there's a regular mode which just randomly pulls from those cards to, you know, give you your deck. And then there's a constructed version where you select which ability cards you get. And so the, you know, once you kind of start understanding the systems of the game, the real fun is in building a specific deck of ability cards to allow you to get really good runs. And they balance, you know, some of the ability cards were just objectively bad and not useful, and they balance some of those to be more useful.
Good.
So you don't wind up just feeling like you got screwed by the random ones it picked. And then they also added like a delve mode and a daily challenge, which is kind of like a horde mode and a, you know, one leaderboard, everyone gets the same cards mode that you only get one try at. So there's a lot new to the game, and I like it.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Played more XCOM 2. Obviously, the expansion War of the Chosen, the main shtick of that game is that it adds these three super elite chosen hunters or chosen units that are hunting you.
So your nemesis.
Exactly. And then correspondingly, there are three new troop types, and a lot of the new gameplay elements and systems revolve around either the chosen or your new troops. I took down my first chosen, like for real, killed them, versus just kind of scaring them away last night.
Did you burn the body?
Effectively, yes.
You don't sound certain, Dennis.
I hope he doesn't come back. The game told me he was dead. Now I'm scared. I'm sad I brought it up now. You guys got me worried.
Now two are going to come back.
Ooh, just for your hubris.
Yeah. No, I mean, so they would, there's a random chance that they'll show up in just your regular missions. And when you kill them, they don't actually die. They just disappear and they can still come back later. And so your goal throughout the game is to learn enough about them that you can find their base, find a way into their base. And then you get one try at assaulting their base to kill them.
Oh,
and it's
shit.
This big boss fight. If you fail that, then they're in the game for good. And obviously if you succeed, well, I think they come out of the game, but, yeah.
Because we're big jerks, we instill doubt.
Yeah, now I'm worried about it. But it was, I was, you know, that payoff of actually fighting them for real has been building for, I mean, I've invested probably 15 hours in this run, 20 hours in this run so far.
Right.
And the payoff was very satisfying.
I imagine.
Of finally having that showdown. So they delivered on what they'd been building to. And that's very nice since that's the central premise of the expansion.
Cool.
Yeah, that's me.
So are you gunning for the next one, or are you just hoping you find an inroad?
I am. So the reason I chose the hunters, like, level up as you do. So as basically, or sorry, the chosen do. As they, there's, sorry, this is the weird thing. There is a chosen called the hunter, but all the chosen are hunting you, but one is specifically the hunter.
Okay.
So that's where you're hearing weirdness from me.
That makes sense.
Yeah. The hunter was slightly lower level than the other two. And as they are hunting you, they'll like learn stuff about you. They'll gain experience, get new abilities.
Hmm.
And so like that's how they scale the encounters with your more powerful troops, is they get more powerful at the same time. The hunter of the chosen was kind of lagging behind the curve, I noticed. And so I focused on like, oh, okay. He's like, you know, the slow kid in class. He's not keeping up with the others. Maybe that's my wedge to get in and get him. And so I was more aggressive about going after him.
Okay.
The other two, I've kind of resigned myself to the fact that I'm going to fight them at full power, because they're pretty powerful already, and I spent a lot of resources to take out the hunter.
Right. So the point at which you meet them on the curve will be that both of you at your most powerful.
Yeah, I'm hoping, I think they're slightly ahead of me on the curve, but I'm hoping they top out faster than I do, and then I can catch up.
Will one third fewer chosen coming after you make the game commensurately easier, or will the others pick up the difference and still harry you as much?
Yep, it'll make it easier. That's because each month the chosen choose an action to perform.
Okay.
So it might be permanently reducing the income that you get from a region. It might be making other troops more aware of your presence. Like, there's all these different effects that they can have. And now only two of those can happen a game or sorry, two of those can happen a month versus three.
Good. Okay.
So it is a unmitigated success and a win that I am taking one of them out.
Okay. And just to follow up here, and let's say expert opinion as somebody who's played this several hours.
Yes.
In your opinion, would you say that those who were once hunting, the hunters, have by your actions and your shifting of priorities? Thank you. Okay, somebody was paying attention. All right.
I was waiting for you to land that plane before I went off of you, but...
Yep, there you go. I was waiting for somebody to take initiative.
Listen,
thanks,
Cole,
David.
I did the dad.
Oh man. You played anything else, Dennis?
No, that's my three.
Okay, cool. And finally round us out, Ben.
All right, yeah, I'll try and go a little bit quickly because I think we're running a little bit long on time. I played Zelda on the airplane ride this week.
Ooh.
It was perfect for that. Nice. The Switch is so awesome for that. Unfortunately, the battery life kind of caps out at 2.5 hours. If you have a longer flight than that, then you're out of luck, maybe, unless there's like a charger. But yeah, no, that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that a whole bunch. Luckily, my flight was like 2.5 hours Cincinnati, so that was perfect. Yeah. Also, I picked up 1-2 Switch for the Switch.
Ooh.
Basically as like a tech demo to play for myself. I played it once with some coworkers at work, but I also thought it would be a good game to show to other people who hadn't seen the game before, so I played it with my family over the weekend. Yeah, basically it's a bunch of mini games. It's kind of the equivalent of like Wii Sports for the Wii. All the games kind of show off the features of what you can do with the new technology. Just as an example, there's a game where you are each person's holding one of the controllers of the Switch. So like basically that's how all the games will work, is it's a two-player game, so you don't need multiple controllers for it. The way they get around it with like multiplayer is you can have like two different teams and just kind of like switch off or something if you have a big party,
right?
But all the games you can play with one of the individual halves of the controllers that come with the Switch. One of the games is both people pretend like the controller is a wooden box with marbles in it, which sounds weird. And the goal of the game is to figure out how many marbles are inside the box without looking at it. And so the way you do this is you slightly turn the controller and it'll vibrate as if there were marbles inside of this.
Yeah.
So if you tilt it one direction, you can feel them roll down the side and you can feel the vibrations of them hitting the edge and hitting one another. And so it sounds very weird, but like, so if you turn it too quickly, they'll all hit at once and you can't tell. But if you do it slowly enough, you can feel like, okay, I think that was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I think there's 5 marbles. And then you can try and guess that. And then if you're both right, you go to the next round, which is usually harder, which is usually more marbles. Yeah, I don't know. So that's one example.
Yeah, it's like demonstrating the, like, they call it HD rumble on the Joy-Cons and on the Pro Controller. Yeah. Like one of the things they showed when they first demonstrated the Switch was, like, you can feel how many cubes are in this glass of ice water.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, so there's stuff like that. There's one, which I didn't even know this was a feature of the controller, is there's a eating contest game, and it's a one-player game. Where you hold the controller, the camera point to your mouth, and you're supposed to bite up and down, and it measures how many sandwiches you're eating in a period of time.
Yeah, it's the same IR sensor that can tell if you're throwing rock, paper, or scissors.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So all the stuff that I hadn't really, I guess, seen before, I guess because I hadn't watched any of the tech videos. But it's just like fun little gimmicky games that you can play, you can bring to a party and play. And yeah. So
did your family have fun with it?
Yeah, I think so. One game that we played a lot. There's one called Zen where you're supposed to like hold a pose and then whoever moves the most loses. So that was a lot. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, I don't
I played
know.
That
it was a
game
good time.
When I was a kid.
Yeah.
What?
Did I play that game when I was a kid?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm moving and you're not.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, it's pretty cute. It's so that was fun. Any questions about that before I move on?
No. Is there an explicit JS Joust clone in that?
JS Joust.
Johann Sebastian Joust. Remember that game we played with the PS3 controllers?
I do not remember that, actually.
Oh, that might not have been you.
No, that was definitely you.
Yeah, oh, so no. you're all holding a controller. We had controllers, not the Move. And you're trying to get someone to move fast enough to knock them out.
Right, so the game...
Slow motion underwater fighting.
Right. Slow motion Tai Chi is the way that I refer to it. So the game itself would play music. And when it was playing slow, you move slow. When it was playing fast, you move fast. And the goal was to try and maneuver so that you knock... So that you jostle somebody so that they lose.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't remember playing that game, but that...
It was part of Sports Friends.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I assure you, if David doesn't remember it, then you were the person who was there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a game exactly like that. They have a quick draw game where you use your controller like a gun and shoot at someone when they say fire.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I recall that being the common criticism of 1-2 Switch was that it felt very much like that one game in Sports Friends, repeated a lot.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But that could have been inaccurate. That could have just been a weird prejudice based on motion controls.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think it's as good as WarioWare, but I think it goes in that type of direction where the games are very... they throw you off balance in terms of what you're doing, and so it makes it somewhat entertaining.
Do they reskin any of the prompts? Like, I know... And let's just take the example from before, the box of marbles versus the glass of ice water. Does it throw you curveballs based on like the theme of what it's asking you to do?
Usually the way it works is like the menu is just kind of like a high definition picture of something related to the game. And then if you hover on it for a little bit, it'll play like an intro video of how to play it.
Okay.
And then you have the option of like selecting it if you want. You can like skip the video or whatever and actually play it. Yeah.
What I was trying to get at is WarioWare seems like the kind of series that would tell you like, hey, milk a cow so you win. But I can't figure out what else you would do with that motion that isn't obscene.
Gotcha. There's literally a milking cow game too in the 1-2 Switch.
That is the one analog.
Yeah. That's the safe space, I suppose. Yeah, I don't know. They have one of them that's interesting, another one player one, is you connect the controllers back to the Switch, and it's called Baby, and you're supposed to try and put the Switch to sleep. It was really weird. you have to like rock it or whatever. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, that would be a little weird.
It's very meta commentary with that game, I guess. But yeah, all right. That I have one other thing, but I haven't played it much, so I think I'll probably hold that for another week.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Do you want to say what it is, or do you want to leave it a surprise?
It's going to be a cliffhanger for the episode.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. Thanks for helping me market this.
No problem.
We have been going for a while. Do you all want to button it up?
Button.
Let's leave this super short for the thanking you of listening to level number 218. If you came out to see any of the attendees at the Portland Retro Games Expo, the people at the booth, thank you so much. Happy to have met you. And we hope to see you again at one of the other shows. Otherwise, subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts or Google Play. And if you're going to be picking anything up for the winter holidays, consider going to duckfeed.tv/tipjar and use that Amazon link. That does help us out, and it costs you nothing extra. And also tell your friends about the show, not about the Amazon thing. Sorry, I mixed that up. Am I forgetting anything?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. So I have been Cole Ross. I am at, let's say, Duckfeed TV on Twitch.
I'm Dennis Furia. I am GreenLaser73 on Twitch.
I am David Moneysmith. I am on the internet.
Just like
but
right
what's
now,
your name
or...
on the internet?
It really varies.
I am Ben Merkel at MerkelBee on Twitch.
Yeah. And stick around for some titles.
We need to find like a, I don't know. There's too many names on the internet, I guess.
Way too many. like a universal ID. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some kind of universal resource locator where the resource is us. Yeah. who
Trust
has titles?
Me, the government would be very happy if you came up with that.
I imagine they would. Yeah. I was mostly joking. I was trying to make a joke about URLs. Dennis, what titles have you got?
Yeah, I've got the Lucio Cam. I've got midway through the first half. They call it XCOM 2 in France.
XCOM 2?
Oh, yeah. anyone feeling some bananas? And then personal favorite, consider the haunch.
Okay. So a slight variant, I had XCOM 2. Dot dot dot. Stop it. and then I also had Naughty Dog Double Tap.
Okay. Ben?
Don't got shit.
All right. And I also had Consider the Haunch.
I like that one. That feels in line with us.
It feels like something we would say.
I still want to suggest just the facepalm emoji.
I really can't. That would mess so much stuff up. It really would. Like, it wouldn't display right for everybody. I agree with you. That would be a good one to do at some point, but I don't feel confident that podcasting technology is up to what you are proposing.
Yeah, the sad thing, and I totally agree. The sad thing is, there's actually a fairly good chance it would work.
Oh yeah, well, like different text encoders and stuff like that. I know from listening to feedback from people, they listen in some very suboptimal circumstances, and by suboptimal, sure, I mean sure. Like not on a recent mainstream smart device.
True.
Yeah. So let's make it Consider the Haunch. I really need to go to bed.
Likewise.
Yeah, I'm not gonna edit this tonight. I just need to go crash. So if you're listening to this, sorry it's up later. I probably already apologized in Slack.
We were up later too, so
yeah. Cool. Well, take care, everybody.
Yeah, sleep well.
By which I mean the people attending here on the call. Thanks for coming out. Have a good week. I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.